Well, good afternoon or good evening, wherever you be in the world. This is Ralph Kermit Winroad II with the Ralph Winroad Show, coming to you live out of Alaska. Nice, beautiful cloudy day, and we're running 12 degrees above zero. We had a little below zero last night. Got a groundbreaking show today. Going to be joined first by Jerry Leiphart, which was the attorney, or Leiphart, I'm not sure the pronunciation, if I maybe I'll get corrected here. He was the attorney for Dr. Judy Wood on her qui tam case that was filed in New York and went to the Second Court of Appeals and to the Supreme Court. And I'm very honored to have Jerry on the line with us. Are you there today, Jerry?
Yes, I am, Ralph, and we say Leiphart.
Leiphart, okay, great. And well, I really I appreciate what you did for Dr. Judy Wood. It's to take on a case like this, so it probably didn't make you a lot of friends. It's a landmark case, as far as I'm concerned, and I think it'll be proven down the road here as people start to find out about it. The first, I've got a couple of things in the legal side of this, but the statement, because you're an attorney and you're into evidence, let me ask you this. Is there a report existing today in the public forum by the government that ever investigated the collapse of the Twin Towers or of the World Trade Center?
Well, the plain answer to that is no, and it is almost literally the case that virtually no one claims that there is. I mean, after all, the 9/11 Commission report has been disavowed in two separate books by those who were at the epicenter of preparing it, namely the book Without Precedent, prepared by the co-chair persons of the commission, and the book The Ground Truth, prepared by the general counsel or the chief legal officer of
Hold that thought. We got to go to break and we'll be back. And this is going to be a really enlightening show today. Back in a minute. Well, we're back from break here, and I got Jerry Leiphart, the attorney that worked with took Dr. Judy Wood's case and put it into court. Do you want to finish your thought? Because I've got a couple of questions here.
Yes, sure, Ralph. So just to finish the thought, the idea that there has been an investigation of what happened to the World Trade Center site simply is not correct. The 9/11 Commission report has been disavowed. And as I think you know from a previous show that I heard you do with Dr. Wood, you now know that the NIST report simply did not investigate what happened. It so narrowly confined circumscribed the time frame in which it purported to conduct an investigation that it simply did not make any findings at all in connection with what actually destroyed those towers. And there simply are no other official reports. There's a third unofficial report taken on by and large by a group of volunteers who worked under the auspices of FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Administration. But their report, unofficial though it was, likewise came to no conclusion as to what destroyed the towers, and that is essentially what it said. So,
you know, I just find this shocking. When I have found this out, I mean, how can this be in today's world?
The short answer to that appears to be that this was an event made for TV and for mainstream media, and people by and large believe what they see and hear and are told over and over again via the medium of TV, so that people appear up to this point by and large to have just been willing to make the assumption that, well, there must have been an investigation conducted out there somewhere, and let it go at that. In years to come, it is, in my view, highly probable that part of the unraveling of what was done to us on 9/11 will center on the psychological or psychological operations or PSYOP aspects of what was done as we as a society become gradually more familiar with the concept of PSYOPs as that term is used in connection with either military operations, crowd control, or indeed perception management. By way of just a very brief analogy, we know that right now, in connection with the ongoing financial crisis, a lot of the information and data that we are given concerning the economy is either false or misleading, but is designed to make it appear as if a recovery is coming or is taking place. And so it was with 9/11. It was largely operation in the use of illusion and deception.
Let me read here two excerpts. First of all, the mandate, let's just agree here that the mandate from Congress was to investigate completely the total, everything that happened at 9/11, including the collapse or the destruction of the Twin Towers. Is that true?
Well, I think if you're talking about the congressional mandate given to NIST, the National Institute of Science or Standards and Technology, the entity that produced the 10,000-page document entitled Final Report on the Collapse of the Twin Towers, which was the report that served as the item that Dr. Wood's lawsuit basically attacked on the basis of fraud perpetrated by those who prepared that report. The mandate given to NIST did have three components, which I think you're probably prepared to read there, but the essence of that mandate was to determine why and how the Twin Towers were destroyed, or as the word that was probably used was collapsed.
Let me get two excerpts here of response to when Dr. Judy Wood, this is a letter that came back from NCSTAR1 NIST, and this is a letter where Dr. Wood had put in a request for correction. And this is a quote out of a letter, and by the way, I put this out on email. It's checked on the web page, and this is an exact quote here. As stated in NCSTAR1, NIST only investigated the factors leading to the initiation of the collapses of the WTC towers, not the collapses themselves, end quote. Now, from their report, and this is in two locations in their report, and I'm quoting again, this is from what you just alluded or talked about, the final report of the collapse of the World Trade Center towers. Now, I'm going to read this. This is in a footnote in two places in that book or in that report. The focus of the investigation was on the sequence of events from the instant of the aircraft impact to the initiation of collapse for each tower. For brevity, in this report, this sequence is referred to as the quotation probable collapse sequence. Then they end the quote, although it includes little analysis of the structural behavior of the tower after the conditions for collapse initiation were reached and the collapse became inevitable, end quote.
Well, that is just a very obtuse way of saying they did not determine what destroyed the Twin Towers. that, in Dr. Wood's view, and as the basis for the request for correction that she filed, was fraud. And legally speaking, as an attorney, and as you say, someone who is concerned with evidence, I am able to say that she was correct.
And so we could restate this. Probable collapse sequence could be inserted the word probable hypothetical collapse sequence. Would that be correct?
It's just you could say their guess as to what led to what might have then been leading up to or beginning to have a collapse. In other words, they did not investigate what destroyed the towers. It's a stunning statement. And in most contexts, it just simply would not be accepted. It would be called for what it is, science fraud. But in the context of 9/11, we as a society just are apparently not quite there yet. We're just not quite ready to grasp the significance of essentially what has been already said, what has been already admitted. It can't be clearer than what you just read, Ralph, that there has not been a determination of what destroyed those towers done by an official or officially charged and mandated entity. Has not been done. We go on to say, that is to say, in behalf of Dr. Judy Wood, we go on to say that her work, the request for correction that you alluded to, that she filed with NIST to let them know that they had committed fraud and that their contractors had committed science fraud, that work went on to request for correction by way of providing scientific evidence and information and analysis of what in fact destroyed the Twin Towers, done in the manner of a forensic evaluation based on the available evidence and based upon, significantly, upon her analysis of that evidence to the effect that the towers were destroyed by one form or another of what are referred to as directed energy weaponry.
Let me ask you this. In the case you filed on behalf of Dr. Judy Wood, it's basically a three-part question. Usually in cases you will see that it is frivolous or without merit. That's usually one of the things they come up. Number two, as I understand it, all discovery was denied in the lower case. And the third question, which is happened in the Second Court of Appeals, is there had been a change which Congress had made in the whistleblower, if you will, code sections, retroactive to change the standards of filing a whistleblower suit, which I'd like you to address that in the final thing. And they knew about it, and they knowingly say, we are not going to use it.
Well, yes. Let me address that. Basically, virtually anyone who has sought to use legal process to challenge the official version of events on 9/11 will have had the attempt to label their case as being frivolous or being without merit.
Okay,
now, are we coming up on a break?
Hold that thought. We've got to go to a break. Jerry, we'll be back in a minute. Stay tuned. Well, we're back in break here, Jerry Lepard. Let me rephrase my question here. I'm talking to an attorney. I didn't properly phrase my question here. Has the court made any determination frivolous or without merit? And did any of the evidence of Dr. Judy Woods ever get tested for the veracity of its evidence in that court?
Okay. In connection with the label frivolous The short answer is no. We successfully avoided that sort of labeling, in the sense that the defendants in the case, which the two main defendants of which were, and these are names that that I want your viewers to know, Ralph.
Okay.
The two main defendants were Science Applications International Corporation and Applied Research Associates Corporation. So the one goes by the four letters SAIC, the other by the three letters ARA. Each of them are very major defense contractors. Both are heavily involved in the manufacture, development, and testing of the lethality effects of directed energy weaponry, and both are involved in the mechanics of psychological warfare. That is what SAIC and ARA respectively do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Mm-hmm. Those are the main entities that we sued. They and the other defendants sought repeatedly at virtually all levels of the litigation, and as you noted, it started in the Federal District Court, United States District Court in New York, the Southern District of New York, went to the Second Circuit Court of Appeals, and then went to the U.S. Supreme Court on a request for writ of certiorari, which was denied.
Uh-huh.
At no time, and despite numerous requests, did the defendants' requests for various sanctions or fines or reimbursement of fees that would accompany a finding that a case was brought for frivolous reasons was granted. They tried to get such costs assessed against Dr. Judy Wood, but they failed. The courts, in all instances, denied those requests. Now, there were those who followed this case during the proceedings in court, and who fervently hoped and wished for and even predicted that such costs would be assessed. And it's fair to say that they were disappointed when the courts denied all such requests. Now, that takes us to the second part of your question, Ralph, and that is the evidence and the ability to obtain evidence during the pendency of a case through the process that lawyers call the discovery process. Basically, we were not able to get to the discovery stage in those cases, and that is too bad. Had we done so, we would have been able to ask the representatives of SAIC and of ARA to produce documents, to answer questions, to admit certain things, and to sit down at a conference table and have their depositions taken, such that we likely would have been able to either get some very useful information or to force the defendants to seriously consider settling the case. However, their motions to dismiss the case based upon the technical legal grounds associated with QI-TAM cases was initially granted and then by the District Court, Southern District of New York, and then upheld by the Court of Appeals. Now, as you noted, Congress actually did change the law on which QI-TAM cases are based, which is the False Claims Act. The U.S. Congress amended the False Claims Act during the year, I believe it was 2008, might have been 2009, during the pendency of our case and during the pendency of the appeal. And unusually, that is to say, something that doesn't happen often, the court, or the Congress, I should say, made the some parts of the changes to the False Claims Act retroactive. That is, going back to time period of before the enactment became law, and made those changes applicable to cases that were pending in court as of a certain date. And,
can you stop right there? Can you hold over just a little bit after the
I'll
break?
I'll hold over here? Just
a little bit. Finish this thought. Great. We'll go on a break. We'll be back in just a minute. Well, we're back from break here, and Jerry, why don't you go ahead and finish the thought about this retroactive, because that's really an important issue, and I got one more question before we bring on Dr. Judy Wood.
Okay, glad to know that Dr. Wood will be coming on shortly, and you obviously have lots to talk about with Dr. Wood, as her book, Where Did the Towers Go?, is now available, and I can tell you that it is a stunning recreation of the forensic process that she used in order to determine what destroyed the those towers, what destroyed the World Trade Center. So when I finish, I will be looking forward to listening in on that part of your interview, Ralph. So just to return then to the completion of the thought on the retroactive changes made to the False Claims Act. Essentially, what Dr. Wood's detractors won't often tell you is that TTAM cases are notoriously difficult to pursue because the grounds that you must satisfy in order to proceed with a TTAM case are so exacting that the defense side in a TTAM action can almost always find a valid basis for claiming that the case should be dismissed. The fraud has to be described with a great deal of specificity, and the person who describes that fraud has to have been uniquely placed so that they are essentially either the only source of that information or, as the law actually puts it, an original source of the information. And when you have exacting requirements that must be met, then in that event, the side opposing whatever the issue is usually has certain advantages. Well, that is what the defendants in this case, SAIC and ARA, were able to rely on by and large, that, you know, you could not be specific about specific enough about the fraud that they committed. But note what happens here. SAIC and ARA are companies that benefit from the use of top secrecy classification and the use of compartmented information. And when one thinks about how 9/11 was carried out, the answer becomes clear that it was carried out in the context of the ability to use secrecy, classified information, compartmented information, so that essentially you could carry out a 9/11 with perhaps as few as five people or less knowing what was going to take place, because each person in the chain only had the information necessary that they needed to push the buttons on their computer or whatever to do what they were told to do. keeping in mind, Ralph, that on 9/11 there were a number of military exercises taking place, which included among them the specific objective of having hijacked aircraft crash into governmental buildings. That was a part of the military exercise taking place on 9/11. Now, when you have a specific exercise like that conducted on the basis of secret compartmented information, you are in a position where virtually no one can distinguish the real from the illusion. Now, just to complete the thought on the retroactive changes made in the False Claims Act, it has been Dr. Wood's contention, it's been my claim all along, that there are people within industry and within governmental circles and legislative circles who have always done whatever they could to assist Dr. Wood, but to do so without either breaching their own requirements to keep things secret or putting themselves out on a limb, so to speak, in some other way. It has always been our contention that Dr. Wood's case was essentially a whistleblower case and a case that, when it does finally break open, will do so as a result of one or more people coming forward in a way that they can and under the conditions that, you know, are then existing, to be able to break open the cloak of secrecy that still guards what happened on 9/11 and prevents it from impacting upon public consciousness. So, in any event, the law was changed. It was made retroactive. It technically did cover our case. And so that was a key argument that was made to the Second Circuit Court of Appeals, but as you noted, the Court of Appeals, in language that I'm not going to try to recall here, but it did specifically acknowledge that it was aware that we were making that claim, but it did choose not to base its decision on the fact that the False Claims Act had been changed.
So all right, Ralph. My position as a lay person, we know the law is there, we know it has application, and we're choosing not to use it.
Well, okay, that is a lay person's interpretation. It is also not that far afield from a legal interpretation, but as a lawyer, all I can do is indicate to you, you know, what the court held. And to indicate, you know, what, if any, steps, you know, we took in response to it. And in response to it, we tried to take the matter to the U.S. Supreme Court. But the U.S. Supreme Court, as it does in the overwhelming number of cases or the overwhelming majority of cases that come before it, it lets the decision of the lower court stand. So that is what happened. It is a matter of public record. I am also very pleased to point out that much of the forensic evidence that Dr. Wood uncovered and analyzed was made use of in the documentation submitted to the court at the various levels. That information is a part of the public record. As is her request for correction, which is actually compiled, as you know, at the NIST website, thereby making Dr. Wood's forensic work the only explanation of what happened on 9/11 that is a part of the official public record as of this time. So literally, if one wants know what happened on 9/11, what destroyed the World Trade Center, One can do so by consulting the request for correction and other materials that Dr. Wood filed with the National Institute of Standards and Technology.
Okay, I want to bring Dr. Judy Wood on. I thank you, and I would just get one more. You had a very succinct statement about her latest book, which I am going to coin as the only investigation, comprehensive investigation into the destruction of the World Trade Centers. Would you close just with your parting, you elegantly put that before that, your interpretation or your view of the book, her current book?
Okay, well, as I said, her book is, I'm just very pleased that that book is now out and available, as it does a wonderful job of actually furthering the information that was available to us in 2007 to 2009. Her book, as I have been able to go through it so far, actually adds to what she had already done, confirming that Dr. Wood is continuing her forensic examination and evaluation. And the one final thing that that I would like to reiterate is that your listeners really do need to examine whatever publicly available information or information they can gather up concerning the two companies, SAIC and ARA, and in particular, the work done by those companies in connection with directed energy weaponry and psychological operations. SAIC and ARA, and therein lie clues to the means by which the events of 9/11 could have been carried out. Thanks, Ralph.
Well, thank you, Jerry, for taking time out. I'm very honored to have you as a guest, and I'm extremely honored that and appreciative that you took the case for Dr. Judy Wood and went all the way clear to the end to the Supreme Court. Thank you.
You're quite welcome. Thank you, Ralph.
Okay, well, that gives us a lot of enlightenment into the legal side.
Oh, well, I was just delighted to have a lawyer like Jerry Liepart represent me in this case and help me through this case and understanding all of the ins and outs with the legal process. What was awkward is how does a citizen move forward with this? With, you know, what avenues do we have as citizens of this country when we see something going wrong? And as a taxpayer, our tax dollars were spent on that NIST report and on the contractors for the NIST report. So when these contractors committed science fraud at our expense, that should be an issue with everyone. We paid for an investigation that we didn't get. And that was my point with this.
I guess I lost Republic Broadcasting someplace in there. I guess I'm back.
Yep.
Okay, I guess we're all here. Anyway, welcome to the show, Dr. Judy Wood.
Thanks. Glad to be here. And I'm so delighted to have Jerry Liepart on.
Yes, he gave a great insight into the legal side of your case that you brought up, the empirical evidence, and I've never challenged. And you went clear of the hilt. You tried to get this heard by the Supreme Court of the United States, and they chose not to hear it. Astounding.
It's my understanding that the change in that law that was retroactive was that you didn't have to say exactly where somebody was standing and what where the second hand was on the clock when they said whatever they said and whatever they did that was fraudulent. They changed the rules and they brought it this new law about for accountability on the bailouts. But all we needed to show was that they knowingly allowed fraudulent information to go forward. That's a piece of cake.
And is there any belief that those two companies, SAIC and ARA, would not know that?
Part of the evidence we present is that the leader of the ARA team presented technical papers at engineering conferences on this technology.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, on energy weapons.
So they knew.
Yes. And, you know, another one was Underwriter's Lab that made four different mock-up models, two full-scale and two half-scale, of the floor spans of the World Trade Center, put them on fire, cooked them for twice as long at like double the temperature, and they didn't fail. They didn't fail to support load. So they had to call off the test because why keep, you know, cooking it? Yet they signed off a report saying that fires did it.
Were you not shocked when you got a letter back from NIST stating that the investigation did not include the collapses themselves? Was that shocking?
At first, I was wondering, you know, what's going on here? And what does that mean? And then I got to thinking about, you know, what's the time span there? You know, it was ambiguous in the report, but they clarified it, so there's no ambiguity left. But yeah, it came about because I was asking why their report, you know, violates their scenario violates the laws of physics, and they said, well, their report stopped at the time that the tower, you know, the towers began to come apart. So while those towers were still standing, they obeyed the laws of physics. So their report does not disobey the laws of physics. Isn't that interesting logic?
I just find it absolutely shocking. I don't know. When I found out about it, I said, this cannot be happening in America. Everybody's talking about the report of 9-1-1, the collapse. We need a new investigation because the other one was no good. Guess what, folks? The other one does not exist.
And, you know, back when I started really becoming vocal about this in 2006, I said, well, the towers didn't collapse. They didn't, you know, fall to the ground. They turned to dust. You can't call that a collapse. It's you know, they blew away. You know, they, and I was so ridiculed for that.
I've seen some of the
trained.
Stuff.
That, go ahead.
Well, I've seen some of the things that has happened to you, and I have only the highest regard for you, Dr. Judy Wood, because your quote peers have attacked you, have blocked you from groups. They've made all sorts of untrue statements out there. They've called you. It's just I am shocked that people that have a quote PhD are at this level. Somehow, I thought incorrectly that when you get to that level, you ought to have some sort of moral compass and integrity, and they don't. And that's just shocking.
As is pointed out, this is a psychological operation. I think it doesn't take too many leaders, as long as they're good leaders, to get followers to go wherever they lead them. And
okay, hold on just a minute. Hold that thought. Okay. We'll be back in just a minute. We've got to go to break. Back in a minute, and we're going to get into some more specifics after the top of the hour. Well, we're back from break, and I'm extremely honored to have Dr. Judy Wood that has just released the only comprehensive investigation of the World Trade Center's the destruction of the only one. Is that a true statement, Dr. Wood?
I believe so.
How many years have you been working on this?
Oh, what, 9 and a half?
9 and a half years, and I know that you tried to get it through a publisher, and you blocked dilatory actions, and they wanted to tear it all up. And how many photos do you think you probably examined to date?
I think there's, I forgot, it's over, photos I've examined?
Mm-hmm.
Probably 10,000? That's just a guess.
So around 10,000 photos and all sorts of other evidence to arrive and come out.
No, much more than 10,000, because
okay.
it's approaching 1,000. It's in the book, images and diagrams. So yeah, I've looked at more than 10 times that amount. So okay, sorry, I'm too exacting here.
Now, before we get into the specifics next hour, tell us about, you have a new book, where they can find it, about how many pages, and give us some information about the book. I'm actually holding one right now, and it's a high-quality book. It's like a textbook. I mean, it's heavy, too. It's unbelievable. Go ahead.
Well, on day one, the big question in my mind was, where did the towers go? There's nothing left. Once the dust moved away and the sunlight could come through, you see there's nothing left much on the ground. I'm not going to say absolutely nothing, but very little debris. And then the following day, George Stephanopoulos was at the scene, and he was talking with Peter Jennings. And Peter Jennings asked, well, where's all the rubble go? And George Stephanopoulos says, I don't know. I guess it all fell down and just vaporized or evaporated. The video of that conversation is on my book website, which is wheredidthetowersgo.com, all one word. There's a link to it from my homepage, which is drjudywood.com. But it's surprising, but people forgot to keep asking that question. Because people, when they're, if they don't have answers, they keep asking. Once they're given an answer, they move on, even if the answer makes no sense. So apparently, George Stephanopoulos was told the building evaporated.
Isn't that astounding? And I mean, this is Jennings. He's a major network guy. Where's the rubble?
It fell down, and then it evaporated.
Yeah, it's gone.
But people were so traumatized then, just like the story that was repeated over and over again about steel-toed boots melting. And nobody stops to think if that makes logical sense. If my oven is melting, the turkey inside is pretty well done. But we don't have any reports of burned feet.
Amazing, isn't it?
But people, when they're traumatized, they don't question what they're told. They just take it on. And that is one of the characteristics of... One of the benefits of the PSYOPs is that people believe what they're told when they're in that vulnerable position.
Well, I tell you, again, I really want to commend your determination, because you've sacrificed so much to get to this point. And now it's out there. Everybody's been calling for a new investigation. Even Richard Gage of the 1,400 plus engineers that I question. I don't know whether I'd want one of those people working on my stuff here, but they wanted a new investigation. Hey, it is your lucky day. It's out. Backed up by empirical evidence. What a novel idea. We're going to get into some specific things next hour. Stay tuned. Well, this is Ralph Kermit Winterode II coming to you live out of Alaska with the Ralph Winterode Show, and very honored today, extremely honored to have Dr. Judy Wood on. Are you there, Judy?
Yes, I'm here.
And announcement of the only comprehensive investigation with empirical evidence of 911 is out. It's the lucky day of all those people that have been shouting from the rooftops, where we want a new investigation. It's out, and it's available, wheredidthetowersgo.com. No spaces. Wheredidthetowersgo.com. And before we went to the top of the hour there, we're talking about Jennings, talking about where is the rubble, about how many tons or percentage of the Twin Towers is... shall we say, not laying on the ground and what we would think stacked up. How much is missing?
Around 80% to 90%, somewhere in there.
And that equates to how much in tonnage?
Well, you have two 500,000-ton buildings. So 80% is 400,000 tons from one building. And then, 450,000 tons from the other building. And this isn't even including Building 7. this talking about the two main towers. Because that's just phenomenal amount of material gone.
And what was the time frame of this to happen?
Oh, let's see, 101 seconds, I think, for the North Tower, and less than an hour for the South Tower.
But in the actual, quote, collapse, if we want to call it a collapse, or the
demise of the buildings, well, the ground shook for 8 seconds for the North Tower when it did its final poof. I don't say collapse. You need a new name for it. Poof. The towers were dustified. They went poof.
Right. So basically, to be in my terms, each one of them in less than 10 seconds, they went from freestanding buildings to all of a sudden, between the two of them, together, each of the 10-second dustification, we saw 800,000 tons of iron or of steel, not iron, just steel, steel girders, concrete, and other components in that building turned to dust. Is that correct?
I won't say necessarily in 8 to 10 seconds because we don't know what was going on for the hour before then.
Okay.
I kind of think that the building was getting dissolved, you know, for a period of time beforehand. But definitely it did, you know, an abundant amount of dustification right at the tail end of that time period.
Now, in this dust that was found at the bottom, did they find any evidence of any toilets, file cabinets, computers, anything like that?
No, and there's a one fellow that talks about just a tiny little remnant of a telephone keypad, and that was it.
Out of all of the... Oh, hold on a minute. We'll be back in a minute. Got to go to break and back in just a minute. Back with Dr. Judy Wood. Well, we're back with Dr. Judy Wood. We're talking about the only comprehensive investigation. It's out in her new book, just released, self-published, and it's available at wheredidthetowersgo.com, all one word. Talking about the toilets, I saw one of them that I had to chuckle. It said that some Jewish students were hauling all the toilets out, so that's why we didn't find any porcelain. Oh, God, I tell you, you know, if this wasn't so serious, it's just unbelievable. You have here in your chapter 11 about these toasted cars, about how many cars and about how far away were these cars, and just describe what you call a toasted car. Are you there? Hello?
Whoops, yep, I'm here.
Oh, okay.
I use the word toasted to mean, you know, something happened to it. It's toast. It's history. It doesn't pertain to how it got harmed, destroyed. Something happened to it. You can't fix it. You know, it's done with. And so I call that toasted. It's just a new name to reserve for whatever happened to it. It was affected somehow. I forget what the number was now. It was over, I think it was 1,400 that they counted. That was enough left to count it as a vehicle. 1,400 vehicles that were toasted and had to be towed away, you know, that were around Manhattan. As far away as at least a half a mile or more, there was reports of spontaneous combustion of vehicles just sitting there and then poof, up in flames. And of course, go ahead.
No, that's just pretty astounding because they weren't even in close proximity to the building. So how does this magically happen with all of the nonsense of controlled demolitions or thermite or nanothermite or whatever?
You have to look at the evidence first. You start with the evidence, and as I say, you know, listen to the evidence carefully enough, it'll tell you exactly what happened. If you don't know what happened, keep listening until you do, because the evidence always speaks the truth. But the key is to not be distracted from what the evidence is telling you. So you start with the evidence. You know, let's say you've never heard of a gun before, don't know what a gun or a pistol or something is, but you come upon a body that has a bullet hole in it. when you study what happened carefully enough, you can then realize that it had to have been shot with a gun. You don't know what the gun exactly looks like or exactly where it was located, but you know that something fired a bullet that went into this body.
Mm-hmm.
And so looking at data and looking at evidence very carefully, instead of starting with, well, let's see, we don't know about guns, but we know about bow and arrows, we know about slingshots, and we know about firecrackers. So it has to be one of those. You have to pick. No, that's not scientific. You start with the evidence and see what the evidence tells you and see where the evidence leads, and which is what I was doing and all along. Just let the evidence keep speaking gradually. You don't force it anywhere. So I just start isolating these categories of the same phenomena I saw over and over again, like, you know, dustification. And there's fuzzballs. That was the fine dust that would come around people's feet. And then pretty soon I noticed it came up all by itself. So you start noticing these things. You don't be in a hurry to jump to a conclusion. Another term I give for that is like playing pin the tail on the donkey, blindfolded. Now you look at what the evidence is telling you, because if this technology is unknown, you can still figure out what it is. Just like coming upon a body with a bullet hole in it if you've never seen a gun before. And you keep looking at these hallmark traits. So I've got this pretty long list of categories of evidence that needs to be explained. Some really weird evidence. And then eventually I tripped upon some work where somebody could actually reproduce every one of these phenomena with the same technology, which was also astounding.
And
I don't just the Hutchison effect, or that's what I call it, because that's something I have personally witnessed. That it's not something I read about in a book that's theoretical or speculation. It's something I have seen. You know, it's the same physics involved. Whatever you want to call it. Other people come up with fancy terms for it, but I think that I'd like to stay away from the trendy terms.
And the Hutchison effect is based on who's or what?
John Hutchison, who was trying to reproduce the work of Nikola Tesla and T. Townsend Brown and some others, and he would experiment with these various things that he read about that they had done, and he could reproduce them, and then some. He discovered some unusual effects, like this work of, you know, and this, it turns out that this technology is even patented as of, what, 1911, I think, by George Pigot, I don't know how you pronounce his name, who, you know, levitated stuff between a static field and a ground plate. Mm-hmm. He created this static atmosphere in which he could levitate stuff. There's various other, you know, phenomena, like heavy materials just come apart. Instead of the molecules being attracted to each other, they repel each other. Mm-hmm. So something could just come apart. Or you have atoms that change, become something else, it appears, and which is called transmutation.
Now, these weird fires that you have researched out here, I looked at some of those. It's just astounding. These fires are this, quote, molten metal that is claimed to be out there, but these fires, they're on geometrically, these things that look like a solid yet, but somehow they want to call them molten. Well, molten is going to melt. And then, of course, we get down to the other, which you've analyzed, go on to, is if I perceive something that looks like it's molten, is it? Does that mean that it's molten?
No. Molten meaning liquid. But if you pick something up, how can you pick up, unless it's, you pick it up with a scoop, you know, like a ladle. If it's molten, it's liquid. You can't pick it up as a solid object.
Right, isn't going to happen, is it?
Nope.
And so the bottom line is these claims of these tons of molten metal, I can't find any pictures of them yet.
Yeah, if you have the stories we heard, like the steel-toed boots melting without burning feet inside the steel-toed boots, lakes and rivers of molten metal running in the basement, but I don't think you can store molten metal at the bottom of a swimming pool. No, the bottom of a lake. There was water mains that broke that day. And there's pictures of the firefighters walking in knee-deep water. I don't know how you can have molten metal underneath that knee-deep water.
No, or clay. Some of the claims that molten metal was there weeks after. How does that happen?
There's glowing metal, but all things that glow are not necessarily hot.
And an example of that would be?
Well, you have a fluorescent light bulb and an incandescent light bulb. The incandescent light bulb, you know, with the, it's like a resistance heater. Mm-hmm. The filament has it glows because it gets so hot. Mm-hmm. But a fluorescent light bulb has a different mechanism that causes it to the light to be there, mm-hmm. to come out of it. And you can, you know, carry a fluorescent light bulb in your hands without it burning.
Mm-hmm.
So you look at the photographs, and there's paper on the ground, and these piece of orange glowing things. They look like Cheetos, so that's what I call them, Cheetos. Just, you obviously wouldn't confuse them with some food. I'm pointing out how weird they are. But you have these glowing Cheetos, you know, on a piece of paper that isn't burning. So mm-hmm. clearly that paper, that those things can't be physically, you know, thermally hot. Mm-hmm. There's some other phenomenon going on that's causing them to emit light. And you know, paper doesn't burn. Also, the glowing stuff isn't in a lake, isn't the shape of a flat horizontal thing. It's lumpy, sticking up out of the ground. If something was molten, it should be a puddle, flat on the ground.
Yeah, that's what I noticed. How can that happen? It's an impossibility. Can't happen.
Yet folks were shown these photographs and told, you know, to memorize, you know, people, you know, assume somebody else already figured out the answer, and the person telling them is confident or sounds confident. So people just assume, and they all kind of follow along with the herd, repeating the talking points of molten metal and, you know, whatever the various comments are. But you look at it, and there's no evidence anywhere of molten metal, but evidence to the contrary.
And, of course, we can't find these great big puddles of molten metal that are actually should be existing after, hopefully someday it cooled down, you would think, wouldn't you?
Yeah, and nobody, you know, has to chisel it out and carry these big sheets of previously molten metal out.
Yeah, it's just, it's so preposterous. Think back to the fall of the, if there's basically two 500,000 ton buildings coming down. Underneath of these is something, I don't know if it's your term or not, but it's the bathtub. This is because these basically were built, some parts of the buildings were underwater. They're under sea level. Well,
yeah, they're built in the Hudson River. This land was in the Hudson River. And then they built kind of a wall, a dike around it to keep the water out.
So there's two important questions. With all of this, hundreds of thousands of tons of material coming down, did we have any seismic, did anything seismic happen to it, and did it damage the bathtub? We'll find out in a minute. Stay tuned. Okay, we're back for a break here with Dr. Judy Wood. She has a brand new book out, Where Did the Towers Go.com. It's all one word. Where Did the Towers Go.com. The only complete investigation into the destruction of the World Trade Centers. The only one in existence today. Unbelievable. Are you there, Dr. Judy Wood?
Yes, I'm here.
You were talking about these two towers coming down. We were talking about the bathtub here, which is underneath, and then, of course, want to get into, if we got 500,000 tons coming down, we should definitely have some empirical evidence in the seismic world.
Yeah, well, one thing, it's a quote I'd like to read by one of the firefighters. He was a survivor who had been in stairwell B, like the third or fourth floor, okay. when of the North Tower when the tower went away. And he said, I looked and said, guys, there used to be 106 floors above us, and now I'm seeing sunshine. There's nothing above us. That building doesn't exist. These are the biggest office buildings in the world, and I didn't see one desk or one chair or one phone, nothing.
Astounding, isn't it? Poof!
It's gone. They didn't get smashed. They could look up and see blue sky.
Yeah. Now, that's pretty astounding. Now, that's a pretty dang good magical trick in today's world, isn't it?
So it makes you wonder, did the buildings fall down?
They didn't, did they?
They couldn't have, because you didn't have any kind of impact on the ground either. No evidence. The bathtub was still intact. There may have been, a little nick here and there, but the biggest damage that came to the bathtub was several days later when they brought in earth-moving equipment. And it was the earth-moving equipment they found was damaging the wall.
God almighty.
Not 500,000-ton buildings falling down, but earth-moving equipment just moving around near the wall.
Right. Wow. When you examined the seismic different locations around there, what did you find there?
There's the seismic stations picked up signals all around. The signal for Building 7 was the most astounding. Some of the stations detected nothing out of background noise. Some of them just barely registered, and at most 0.6 on the Richter scale, which is equivalent to, like, a jackhammer. That's
wow.
Like the bottom story of the first or second story of the building. If you just had one or two stories that fell and nothing above it, if they had a one or two-story building, like a house, clunking down to the ground.
Now, you've also examined some evidence of people that were actually videotaping. Did they hear just humongous noise of all these floors going boom, 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 or something?
Not only that, NIST uses this in their report to dismiss bombs in the building, saying that none of the video with audio recording, none of those videotapes could pick up any significant seismic noise, and you could hear low-level conversations down the street. And there's one particular video where they're interviewing someone, and you see the Building 7 behind the person, and the building just starts, dropping down out of sight, like it's starting to sneak out, dropping down. And it gets halfway down, and the photographer says, whoa, 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 whoa. But the person being interviewed had no idea there's a building going away behind them.
So it was just quietly doing this.
Yes. But the key is, when NIST says that, they use this argument to dismiss bombs in the building, it's fraudulent for them to not apply that to their own analysis, their own, conclusion or whatever, their own story of what happened to the towers cannot exist either with the silent disappearing of the building,
mm-hmm.
or silent demise of the building.
Got a couple of callers here. I was in the wrong window here. You want to take a couple of calls?
Sure.
Maurice in Virginia, you got a comment or a question for Dr. Judy Wood today?
Yes, I'm calling from Virginia. And, Dr. Wood, I'd like to ask you, what is your view on the five Israelis that were caught filming the explosions and that were, later caught in the moving vans? That were apparently fictitious, and there was apparently some traces of explosions found in those moving vans. And do you think they were that fictitious moving front company was somehow, maybe they were the ones that might have planted some of the explosives in there?
I don't know anything about planted explosives. I just deal with physical evidence.
Uh-huh.
I don't deal with who did what. You know, just look at the physical evidence of what happened to the towers.
Yeah.
Let me inject here too. This is about examining the empirical evidence of the collapse. It's not about the political agendas or what might have taken around the other areas. You have any other questions about?
I was going to ask you. Has your evidence uncovered what possible explosive might have brought them down, or does that pertain to it?
Hold on a minute. We'll be back, and we're going to take a break back in just a second. Okay, we're back from a break here, and Maurice, I'm going to answer your question, and we're going to go to the next caller. The use of explosives has been precluded. It's not even it's not even relevant because there is no empirical evidence. So I would suggest go to wheredidthetowersgo.com, all one word, and look at a couple of videos, and then take a look at the and purchase the book. It's all laid out there, thousands of hours of Dr. Judy Wood with real evidence. So anyway, thanks for calling. We're going to go to the next caller. Art in MD is Maryland, I guess. Are you there, Art?
Yes, I'm here, Ralph.
Great. You got a question or a comment for Dr. Judy Wood?
Well, I don't have access to Internet right now, so I can't go to the website, but I'm just asking a question. I mean, is she saying there were not thermite used in bringing those towers down? Some other force was used?
Dr. Judy Wood, you want to address that?
I started out looking at the evidence and to see what the evidence spoke of, what the evidence was telling. I wasn't trying to, you know, play pin the tail on the donkey and fit to a limited choice of options.
Mm-hmm.
And what I determined was that some horrendous new technology was used for evil purposes that day. And we could use that technology for good purposes, as long as people are aware of it. And looking at what it does is very important. Rather than giving a name to it, thermite is a welding material. The buildings didn't melt. End of story. The buildings didn't fall. They weren't cut and fell to the ground because there's no seismic, impact of that much material hitting the ground. Just, you know, a few bottom stories. If you decapitated the North Tower, all but the bottom 16 stories, and just disappeared the top, you know, floors above that, and just dropped a 16-story building, you know, that footprint size, that's the impact that it made. Well, what about this humongously tall building? Where did it go?
Well, we've seen pictures of some of the 47 steel columns that look like they were actually cut with a torch.
If you've seen the cover of my book, which shows the building turning into dust like a bubbler or drinking fountain, where do you cut a steel beam to cause the building to do that?
Well, I've seen those pictures you're describing, and I've always thought there was something there besides thermite going on, because the pictures almost look like you put Alka-Seltzer in water or something. It was just bumbling over.
Exactly.
But you know, at the same time, I've seen pictures of... The beams that were cut...
You can't cut a beam and cause that kind of destruction. And you can't cut a beam in an instant... even if you took us out a saw to cut it, or, you know, melting it, because you have a problem with, the temperature getting through 4 inches of steel. I don't even know if you can use thermite to cut something that big. You know, it takes a long time to melt through it. Melting the building in 8 seconds doesn't compute. Now, angle cut columns, if it's the typical pictures we've seen around the web, those were taken during the cleanup.
Right.
And they had,
not those during destruction.
Those are oxytorch cuts, and I have a picture of an oxytorch being used to cut columns. with the hose being draped over the remnants of the other beams left. So you know that it's not even hot, because that'd be a big hazard to have oxytorch hoses laying right on top of, you know, hot beams.
Right. Well, I'll have to look at your website and see some of the pictures you have.
Yeah, I would also inject, too, thermite, thermate, and all this other stuff might blow up. So does flour, so does dust. It is not an explosive, though. It can explode, but it's not an explosive.
Just like an egg in your microwave oven can explode.
Right.
But it's not an explosive. It will explode.
Now, you should find, traces of powderized aluminum and iron in the dust, because what were the buildings made out of? They were steel buildings with aluminum cladding. And the buildings were turned to powder. So you will have in the dust aluminum powder and steel powder, you know, iron and a few other, you know, add-ons. But if the entire building was turned into powder, that's what you would expect. Along with the chocolate chip cookies that were on the 90th floor, you know, everything was turned to dust.
What seems so ridiculous to me is, you know, the thermite, thermate, and all these other nonsense ideas out there. Okay, let's just say there's something in the dust. How do you explain all of the other empirical evidence? Shh, we don't talk about that. We don't ever mention it. We take one little sliver of something, and somehow we hypothetically blow this up into everything else, and we don't talk about anything else except claiming we want a new investigation.
And to be so well controlled that it doesn't even spill across the street. That's something I just still can't get over. Is Building 7, you see this 47-story tall building, and there's three lanes of traffic, then there's the post office. By 6 p.m. on 9/11, you see you still see the sidewalk over there, and the Building 7 is, you know, in this heap, whatever's left of it. But it doesn't go across all lanes of traffic up to the building. You can still walk down the sidewalk. That
well,
is bizarre.
Art, if you want to really get to go to find a computer somehow, and wheredidthetowersgo.com and purchase the book, and you're not going to believe it. You will not believe the empirical evidence in Dr. Judy Wood's book.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Ralph.
Okay, thank Jim you. In Texas, you got a question or comment for Dr. Judy Wood.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air, Jim. Yes, go.
Hi, Ralph. Yeah, hi, Dr. Wood.
Hey.
I was wondering if you've seen any of the investigation that Phil Jahan and Larry McWilliams have done, in which they uncovered all
this
kinds
was
of anomalies.
Said that the Israelis snuck the toilets out the day before.
Oh, God, the Israelis.
No, this has nothing to do with the Israelis. It has to do with the towers themselves and the supposed victims, many of which they found didn't exist. They had addresses that were vacant lots. Of course, their contention is the reason there were no phones, no file cabinets, no desks, was because they were never there to begin with. That the towers were a sham.
That it was all a thing from my imagination. No, I've been there before when the towers were standing, and I know that they existed.
Well, yeah,
and I've been there afterwards, and they are no longer there, so they went away. Something caused them to go away.
They existed, but much of the towers were hollow inside. They show a backlit section of the tower with the sun in back. And there's a large section where you can see right through it. In other words, there were no floors. It's amazing. You have to look at the website. It's called letsrollforums.com.
Check it out. I look at empirical evidence, not speculation.
It's not speculation. When you can see through the building with the sun in back of it.
I also, when I determine what is at the site, I use multiple photographs that I can verify from multiple directions. I've seen the photo you're talking about. There's talk that it was a photo taken while they're building the towers. Also, it's it hasn't been verified if it's even legitimate. But that's one photo.
Yeah, also, they bring up the question of why the towers were built in the first place, because there was no crying need for office space.
I don't get into speculation on who thought about what to do, whatever. I just look at physical evidence, empirical evidence.
And then, too, some of the...
Does it matter about motives of this person, that person, what somebody thought of this, that, and other?
Yeah, what this whole thing is about is the towers existed. I find it extremely difficult to believe that nobody knew that there was nothing.
Of course they existed, but not as we think they did.
Well, there's no real evidence. A photo or two is not going to... we got all these people that...
It was 110 stories tall, and we see pictures, just stand on the ground from the outside, lots of pictures showing a 110-story building. That 110-story building, whatever was inside of it, went away.
Of course it did, because it was mostly hollow inside.
Well, how did the steel and the concrete that was supporting all this, vacant building?
There was enough there to hold the buildings up.
Did we
ever see any video of people streaming out of the towers on 9/11? No, there aren't any such videos. Because there weren't 3,000 people inside.
I saw videos of people. This one I would love to meet because I saw him, what he experienced. He was in several different photos, and he experienced much stuff. I would love to talk with him. He was wearing a pink shirt. I don't know his name. I refer to him as Pink Shirt Guy. But
he witnessed
so much. I saw it. There's various films of people leaving the buildings, going up escalators from the basement. They took the elevators down to the basement.
Mm-hmm. And, the basement and maybe at the restaurant,
I look at the physical evidence of physically what happened.
And that's what they're doing.
Well, I would tend to disagree, and I want to get on. We got another caller here. We got some more information, but thanks for getting your point out, Jim. John in Florida, you're up next.
How you doing? Hello, yeah, how you doing?
Great.
I was just, I talked to somebody one time, and they said they did a calculation of it and said you'd have to take, because the 10 stories where that first plane hit the 10 stories, and even if that fell onto 100 stories, it destroyed it into dust in less than 10 seconds. I mean, that itself was impossible. And he was saying that it would have to be 20 miles up, flying down and hitting that building 10 stories at 200 miles per hour to destroy a 100-story building. I mean, that was the force that it would take. And I agree that it could be like scalar weapons like Dr. Judy Woods is talking about. But
excuse me, I don't specify scalar weapons. I don't know what scalar weapons are. I just know what we're told they are. There's a lot of terms like that. I do not say what it is, because as soon as you do, you put a veil of mystery over it, because people start throwing out trendy terms for things. I instead look at categorizing the physical phenomenon of what really took place, because only then do you understand what really happened.
The whatever kind of weapon it was, or whatever they were using, what got me was they had the gall to just think that they could get away with it. And so, therefore, I just wonder how many people are in control of this weapon, like Cheney or whatever. Is it a group of 50, 25 that have a weapon that is just so powerful that, nobody could stand in their way? Whatever they want to do, whatever they want to accomplish, they can accomplish that with this weapon. It was like... I remember I did some work in this electronic lab, and we were decommissioning it, and they had sledgehammers. And the people that were working on these electronic modules, if an alarm ever went off, they were to take these sledgehammers and just bust up what they were working on. That's how top secret it was. They didn't want anybody to know what they were building. And then the people that build it don't control it, and that's given to another group of people. So I don't know if you ever thought about how who's controlling all this,
I only discuss physical evidence and what physically took place that day.
Right. Well, somebody needs to stop them or look into it. Somebody needs to be held accountable, that's for sure. But it was a great book. I can't wait to read it. I'm on your website now. So
fantastic. And check the media page also for the video of George Stephanopoulos with Peter Jennings saying the buildings evaporated.
All right. Yeah.
Yeah, there's video of steel beams being dustified right in front of your eyes. They're turning to dust.
It's just insane. It's insane that people can't even realize this. That's what's so incredible about it, that most people can't even fathom this because it's just too off the charts, too off the wall. It's very lucky you can even talk to somebody that can even identify with what actually happened that day. It's incredible.
Well, what Dr. Judy Wood has done is take the empirical evidence, and then when she got been working all this evidence, just to go find a phenomena that could explain this, Tesla's technology. That's real. It
well, I saw it witnessed in front of me. That's why John Hutchinson reproducing Tesla's work and T. Townsend Brown's work, because you could witness it in person. And I have a lot of photographs in the book of samples that he has destroyed with his gizmo, whatever you want to call it, a gizmo. And I don't give it a name, but he doesn't use it as a weapon. But yeah, it just wheredidthetowersgo.com, and that book will show you undeniable evidence that there's no, it's very straightforward.
And it's out there. And what's astounding, it is the only comprehensive examination of the empirical evidence of 911 to date. The only one. Inside of government or out. I just find that shocking. One person in all of America. And Dr. Judy Wood's it. And if she hadn't came forward, where would we be? We'd still be hearing this nonsense put out by A&E 911 and the Truthers and Stephen Jones and God Almighty, all these other folks that have muddled this up so much. No wonder people don't want to hear about it or just throw up their hands.
Well, what has happened a lot is that there's been myths and incorrect information describing my work, and people assume that that's true and assume that's what the work is, when it is not at all. I am looking just at the evidence, at the empirical evidence, and what it tells us.
Which is just absolutely astounding.
My detractors often, like to say, oh, she talks about ray beams from space and space beams. No, those are not terms that I use. Those are terms that my detractors use.
Right, and you've got, I was after in there, the magnetometer in Alaska. I happened to be up here, and they recorded the magnetic interference when 911 happened in the towers. Clear in New York, which is, I don't know, what, 4,000 miles away or a darn long ways away.
Yeah, long distance. And it's interesting that the Earth's magnetic field shifted precisely when the North Tower got its hole and precisely when the South Tower got its hole and precisely when both towers went poof.
Okay, stay tuned. We'll be back in just a minute for Dr. Judy Wood's closing. We'll be back here right after the break. Well, we're back from break with Dr. Judy Wood, and she's got a brand new book out, the only one out there, Comprehensive Investigation of 911, wheredidthetowersgo.com. And all these people that have been wanting a new investigation, you got the only one in town, and it's out there. Tell me it's not so. Go buy the book and read it. Might learn something. What a novel idea. Dr. Judy Wood, you got any closing comments here? We've got about 3 minutes.
Is be careful not to get distracted from the evidence and look at the evidence, not what, what you're told somebody said that somebody did and somebody might have been responsible and whatnot. If you focus on the evidence, and especially the image on the cover of the book, which I call the bubbler, it looks like a drinking fountain of just the building turning to dust in midair. Looking at that and imagining what could have caused that. You have steel chunks flying through the air, and they dissolve like ice cream and become just powder before they get anywhere. steel turning to dust in midair without hitting anything. And just thinking about that, then if you go through the book, that's Where Did the Towers Go? At wheredidthetowersgo.com, I walk you through each set of evidence until you really understand what it's like. You're standing there and look over here, look over there, what do you see? And adding all this up, and then towards the end, I get into how that phenomenon is created in other environments. And you will understand.
I think astounding too in this is you have a color bookmark, so on two-sided color, so you can take it out and follow different things in your book.
What yes, a great the idea. Book, right. The bookmark. Thanks. The bookmark is a map, a street map on one side, and then a picture map on the other side. The picture map is like what's on the back cover of the book, showing all the buildings around the WTC complex are still standing. And there's just nothing there to speak of, you know, what's left. This picture was taken shortly after 9/11. So you can see the streets and what they look like, and then you can also look at the street map. So throughout the book where different places are referred to, you can see it on the map.
I don't know. It's just absolutely astounding. I really get PO'd. I watched this Richard Gage thing. I took the time to watch his nonsense. Building 7 is a typical thing of a controlled demolition. Well, then how come the Twin Towers didn't look like that? Duh. Like,
well, typical controlled demolition. I don't know how it could be typical when there's like no seismic signature associated with it. No, you know, significant seismic signature.
No, it's quietly going down, and all afternoon they don't tell you about all the stuff that's coming out the other side of it that looks like a vacuum cleaner is sucking material out of the building. It's dissolving right in front of your eyes. They don't mention
right.
all that.
Right. All afternoon, Building 7, you saw these fumes coming out. I won't call it smoke because that's assuming the cause. These fumes coming out the side of the building, it looks like building material. You know, it's been dustified all afternoon. But you see, like on the north face, there's open windows. So if there was a traffic jam for that, you know, if it was smoke from fires, if it was a traffic jam for that smoke to get out the windows, wouldn't it go out the least resistance direction? There's a bottleneck getting out the side, so why doesn't it go out the other side? Instead, it goes out only one face.
Yeah, but it's going out straight out from it, too.
Right, and that, it's like it couldn't be pushed out. It had to be pulled out. Weird phenomenon.
And then, of course, we're not going to talk about the Bankers Trust building that supposedly had a little minor damage, and they tried to repair it, and now they couldn't repair it, so when they got it done, now they're, I guess, working on tearing it down. Is that what's going on with the right across the street?
Yeah, they repaired it, and as soon as they finished repairing it, they started taking it apart.
Unbelievable, isn't it? Well, I really want to thank you for all your work. I have great admiration. Go to wheredidthetowersgo.com. And purchase the book and learn. And as always, close. Thank you for being on, Dr. Judy Wood. And watch out for the federales. They're everywhere. We will see you next Sunday. Stay safe.
Thanks.